All right. Well, welcome in, everybody. Welcome into Real Talk by the Platform, episode 8. Super pumped for this one. I'm going to go ahead and share our scripture. This is Psalm 139, verse 13. For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. And then the next verse, verse 14. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. Seriously, I am super excited about this. We don't have any specific announcements right now. As y'all know, there have been a couple promotions going on the Instagram. Those probably will have ended by the time this comes out. But again, follow the Instagram. We've got a lot of cool updates and cool things coming out. We've got some cool plans for the podcast, especially when we head into next season, which will be most likely next fall. So anyways, we are now going to bring in our guest. Say hello.
Hey guys, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate this awesome, awesome opportunity.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Just for a little context, we have recorded this episode before, and it was our wonderful tech guy's first episode. And what happened, Malachi?
How's it going, everybody? So, so we unfortunately have to use tech that isn't ours, which is a blessing and a curse. As most anybody who's in tech knows, if it's not yours, it doesn't always work like you want it to. So we had some issues with storage trying when it comes to transferring the audio from the pod track to the computer.
Mm-hmm. We also randomly had like 15 minutes left
And then what does our poor little tech guy and our awesome host have to do? We have to go through and sort through hours and hours of just random garbage, like what's this, and then it's like we couldn't tell you.
Thanks for giving me credit, but I was not there for that. You meant our executive.
yeah because I was still was in the process of being trained at this point, and so I'm like little bright-eyed and bushy-tailed Malachi in this tech world, you know. I'm like, I got this, I could do this. And absolutely not.
I received a couple panicked texts. That's true. He does know what he's doing now. But I've received a couple panicked texts that night. I think one very panicked FaceTime call.
Dude, yes. Because, okay.
I'm going to have to make an apology video.
Dude, that is no joke, man. And it was like 1 in the morning, curfew's at 1:15. Like, I was like, nope, not going to make it for curfew.
Yeah, but shout out freshman dorms.
Oh, lordy. We're going to completely avoid the subject of freshman dorms. So, yeah. Because there's some serious horror stories. Anyway,
yeah.
Back to...
Recircling. Yeah, that's what I'm going to say now. Recircling.
We're back. We're back here in the studio. I'm a little more experienced. I've done this before.
Thanks to our guests for showing up again.
Dude, heck yeah.
We're back,
man.
Better than ever.
You're a champion, dude.
Amen. I agree with that.
All right. Well,
but,
Yeah.
So pray, y'all out. Everybody out there needs to be saying prayers right now. Fingers and toes
or
crossed.
Bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, yes. Malachi.
Yes.
Yes. Poor tech guy, Malachi. But
hope the tech works.
Dude, it'll work.
Oh, it'll work.
Do you want to know how I know it's going to work?
Because
you're the goat.
Because, thank you. But it's because I figured out how to clear everything. And now
It's like two buttons. We were really...
immature.
Yeah.
Well, and also my
to call the owner of the thing like twice.
Also, my boss is not a tech guy, so he has been trained as far as he needs to go, right? So he's like, record mic levels, right? So I'm sitting here and it's like, now we have somebody, poor guy, who can actually like edit this stuff. So the executive is like, oh, well, you just do this and this. Okay, I'm gonna go get some lunch, bye. And it's like it's like, okay. And I'm sitting there with my arm floaties in the ocean, you know. But it's okay.
Barely. Hey, man, trial by fire. Yeah. Shout out Noah. Yeah, love that.
We love that guy.
That was funny. He was he received a couple panic calls that night too.
Both from me and hopefully from
you. Oh, and from me. I was like, dude, I don't, I'm so sorry.
It just, you know, it.
Shout out to Noah, bro. He's our favorite.
And he's
love
so
that guy.
Patient, bro. He's so patient with me because like I was learning and I was like, dude, the podcast isn't working. And he's like, he's like, what's going on? And I told him and he's like, that's definitely a problem, but we're going to not just toss all the blame onto you. This is your first time. And I was like, oh, thank the Lord. And he goes, but now this is when your training really kicks in. And I got coached up and he was like, nothing is ever your fault. We love you. We're here for you. We're going to walk with you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, bro.
Internally at the platform, we be, there we go.
We,
I was like, what
something.
Am I trying to say here? Repping, we be repping the message.
Amen.
Internally,
especially if you get the new merch.
Mm.
Just saying,
that's true.
Definitely not a plug,
that's
but
true.
Definitely a plug. Anyway, all right, I'm out. I'm gonna let these guys do that thing.
All right,
we'll see y'all later.
See you, bro.
Appreciate it, bro.
Okay, so of course we start out with like. The super important questions. If you were to paint your house a shade of red, what shade of red would it be?
Probably like a cherry red.
Absolutely not.
Well, no, I'm picturing like a Mustang in my head, you know, like a bright cherry red, just like mm-hmm. the same picture. The same like...
Okay.
Yeah.
Paint your house that?
Yeah,
I
was about to
say, I think you just picked a color. You said, oh, you're right, walls. But anyways, next question. Okay. Okay. If you were to paint your house, no, I'm kidding.
Jesus.
Yeah,
Jesus is always the answer.
Favorite video game?
Ooh. Shout out to the OG Wii Mario Kart.
Ooh.
I got many hours logged on that game.
Ooh. Malachi wants to say something, I can tell.
So, you said you have a lot of hours on Mario Kart, right?
Plenty.
Did you have Dry Bowser?
Oh, call him out.
I unlocked every character.
You had Skeleton Bowser?
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. Okay, a little background for those of you that didn't play I don't know if you guys have caught on to this. But
I rented it at Redbox a lot.
Dude, that's so valid. High five, no one else can see.
Yeah.
Anyway, so.
We high fived.
We did indeed.
Way.
I can confirm. Anyway, so Dry Bowser.
Didn't we high five? Thank
yes,
you.
Yes, yes.
Dry Bowser is a character that you can only unlock if you beat a developer's time on the Bowser's Castle course, which is freakishly hard, okay? So little 10-year-old Malachi is white-knuckling the Wii remote to try and beat this time, and I finally got it, but anyway.
You know what else I rented from Redbox a lot? Mario and Sonic at the 2000 blank Summer Olympic Games.
Winter Olympic Games.
No, it was summer for me.
It was the winter one for me.
Ooh, nice. Who did I play as?
Who'd you play? Who'd you play and on what event?
Dude, I was like 5. I just remember it conceptually, not literally.
Yeah, that's me too. Honestly, the only thing I remember, it's like a blur. It's like I remember playing Sonic on the equestrian mode and thinking I was the coolest guy because I was like, I'm Sonic. I can't be beat. And then Mario's like, meow. And he's like,
it's a horse. And you're like, what?
I didn't need that much Italian emphasis on that. Like,
I know it's a horse, Mario. Like, what's your problem, dude? And then Bowser's like, about to break all his horse's legs.
Yeah.
Like, man, that is a strong horse. Dry Bowser different because he's hollow.
That's true.
Was Dry Bowser in the... This is nerd talk. I'm so sorry. Okay. Further important... Goodbye, Malachi.
Nerd talk podcast.
Yeah, nerd talk. Pause.
Okay.
Recircling back.
I'm out. How come this? I think that this is going to be a problem because,
yeah,
like, me and my boy Matthew over here, we're like in conversation. We're like, who's better? Okay, which do you think is more powerful, the Chaos Emeralds or the Dragon Balls? It's like,
okay, I've never watched Dragon Ball. Don't put that on.
Yeah, me neither.
Okay,
but I have
neither.
Seen a debate.
Thank you, guest.
That was an example of like thing like our conversation, and this is all getting edited out. Aww. Not all of it, but this little like exchange we're having right now.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it's like nerd talk over, and then we're going to go back into it.
Okay. That's perfect.
That's valid.
All right. Silence so that I can see where it's at.
All right. One more important question.
I got you.
Chip and drink combo. What's your favorite?
I'm pretty lame, but I like regular Lay's potato chips. Ruffles are good, though. I like Ruffles.
Ooh.
Ruffles. Okay, Ruffles. Mm-hmm. Ruffles. A little bit of spice in there.
I got shockingly excited about Ruffles there.
Ruffles and a can of DP.
Okay.
Or Cherry Coke. Or Cherry Coke.
Ooh, okay. All right. Well, now that we've gotten all the jitters out by talking video games and chips, I'm going to give you the platform, man. Tell us your story.
I got you. So my story starts way back when I was born.
Real quick, trigger warning. There's just some really tough topics here, including
for sure.
A bit of sexual themes and pornography. So,
yeah. But my story starts all the way when I was born. I was born and I grew up young age.
Yeah, as people.
Yeah, yeah. I learned to walk at a young age too.
All right.
Yeah, but anyways,
yeah, we're taking it seriously now. Sorry.
Yes, yes. But for most of my really young childhood life, all the way up to like almost preteen, I feel like my life was really good. I grew up going to church. I was born in a Christ-centered family,
mm-hmm.
and I'm really grateful to my parents because, you know, they brought me up in the church my entire upbringing, and I'm super grateful for them. But right about when I was about to, you know, turn up into those preteen years, right before double digit years, my family had moved to this one city, right? And mm-hmm. I saw a bunch of neighbor kids out because like our neighbor had like a bunch of like grassy fields areas with like parks and structures and stuff in them.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a bunch of the neighbor boys just playing pickup football. And I was like, dope. I want some friends, you know, I'm going to go play some pickup football with them.
Mm-hmm. Very classic American.
Yeah, for
childhood.
Sure. For sure. No, I was playing. I was having a good time. And at this time, my dad, he was all into this like epic, you know, like being a good parent, being a good dad type stuff and reading a bunch of like literature and books.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually got pretty worried that the neighbor kids that I would learn the birds and the bees from the neighbor kids, not my dad.
Which kind of valid fear.
It is. It is. And honestly, I would prefer it if, you know, the kids learn from their parents how it all works.
Mm-hmm.
But when my dad did it, I was at a young age. I still had my innocence, and I didn't want that to, you know, like, be taken away from me. I got told, and I was kind of very shocked and scarred. I was like, well, this is a very important, like, step in how life is created. But at the same time, it's like, why me as a young kiddo, why do I want to know now? Like, let me keep my innocence. Like, seriously.
Did you feel like your innocence was taken? Like, at that time?
Oh, yeah.
That was the feeling.
Okay. I was scarred. Like, sure, it's... Oh, I thought a little bit. You know, it's cool how life begins, but, like, this was graphic.
Mm.
Like, I can't even explain what I felt. Since then, and having conversations with several peeps, I have come to understand why my dad did it, of mm-hmm. course. And, you know, I respect his decision. Would I have waited 100%, but I couldn't control the situations, and it was my dad's feelings. So. Mm. But one thing that he really wanted to hone on in our conversation was how serious the matter was. He made it seem like it was very taboo, very just like, this is the one time we're talking about it, and don't ever ask questions. Just know that this is how you were made, and also don't ever go looking on the internet for it. Like, absolutely, that's like the biggest no-no. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I could be very punished. Like, okay. It would be the end of the world.
It's almost like fear tactics?
Yeah, almost.
Okay.
Like, yeah, it's not good to look at that stuff. It's bad. But at the same time, it's like, why paint it in a way that I can't ask questions?
Right.
Like, numerous times my parents were like, hey, ask us questions. We want you to, like, learn all this. And, like, we're here for you.
Mm-hmm. But this topic.
But it was like, he even said for this topic, if you have questions, don't be afraid to ask. But it just felt like very, like, it just felt awkward, really, really awkward and weird.
Okay.
And, you know, fast forward like several years, I don't know why, but I think it was despite my dad.
Okay.
I ended up snooping around in areas I shouldn't have on the wide, wide web of weirdness. And I didn't see too much, but I felt very like, nope, I can't be doing this. And I ended up confessing to my parents.
Did you feel any shame?
Immense. And just like a lot of guilt and just like, I feel awful for going behind my parents' backs and, you know, this is bad. So I ended up telling them and they completely flipped.
Okay.
That it was.
Is that what you were expecting?
No. They had told me, we love you and we're going to be here for you. Mm. And to have them flip, I was just like, what happened to love and acceptance? And what happened to me being able to ask questions and, you know, just like confess things? Like they told me, they told me, you no longer have innocence. You know that this is wrong. You've came to us. And because you have looked at X, Y, and Z, you are now no longer safe. They told me I was sinning. And like, yeah, from then on, I felt like, you know what? I'm not going to go to heaven. I'm a screw up and this is awful.
So you applied it to your identity.
Oh, it became a huge part of my identity. I was like, you know, when people ask, hey, do you think you're going to go to heaven? I didn't want to say no. So I was like, yeah, sure, I'm going to heaven. But deep down inside, I was like, yeah, there's no way God's going to accept me into heaven. Mm. There's no way. Absolutely no shot that God would let me into heaven for doing this.
So you saw God as far away at this time?
Extremely far away.
Okay.
And going to like a super right-leaning conservative church didn't also help either. And, you know, at this time, one of the youth group girls had confessed to me that she had feelings for me in front of all of my friend group.
Ooh.
Yeah.
What age was this?
I want to say 10 or 11.
Really?
Yeah. A lot happened in my early preteen years.
Okay.
Yeah. So around 10 or 11 is when she told me. And it was like a year or two after that I decided to like look stuff up. But, you know, I got all of my electronics taken away. I wasn't allowed to be in a relationship with this girl, you know, because, you know, I was young and my parents knew better. But we went behind our parents' backs, not in any bad ways. We just like, we like each other and we want to keep doing this. So there was that. But we kind of went off and on every so often until I think it was like 13 or 14 where I was like, you know what? No. That's false. I was 12 when I finally was like, you know what? I'm tired of playing with you. I want to like make this an actual like be steady, like keep going consistently. Because obviously we're off and on. And around this time, you know, we just decided to do it. And I think our parents realized, well, we can't keep them away from each other, but we might as well like severely restrict what they can and cannot do. Mostly on her side. Her parents told her a lot of stuff that she could and couldn't do. And I was told a lot of the stuff too, and it was like very restricting. And like, how are we supposed to be in a relationship if all we can say is we like each other? You know?
So it's like overbearing.
Yeah. And
what do you think like was the most frustrating rule at that time, just to get kind of a picture?
Well, obviously I couldn't drive, but we weren't allowed to go on any like dates, quote unquote.
Okay.
Or I couldn't say I love you. Or I couldn't like...
Parents restricted that.
Her parents did.
Okay.
And then my parents kind of agreed. And I can see why now, but at the time I was like, what's the point?
Right. At the time it was frustrating.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. But now it's like, you don't want to like get too serious at a young age like I was. But I thought it was the biggest thing in my world at this time.
Right.
Because the rest of the youth group was bullying me like awfully. Really bad bullying. And I felt alone. I felt trapped and like I didn't belong. If a new kid showed up into the youth group, I always introduced myself as, hey, I'm the kid that nobody wants to know. I'm the kid that like is, let me phrase, I'm the kid that nobody wants to know. Nice to meet you.
So again, other people's words and actions you're applying to your own identity.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. And then
so you're internalizing a lot of things.
I'm internalizing a very much so. Yes.
Okay.
So it was around 14-ish years old, me and this girl were about to come up on like a 2-ish official years of like not going back and forth, not breaking up, then getting back together, but like 2 years of actual steadiness, for lack of better terms, I guess.
Mm-hmm. That's perfect, actually. I applaud your communication. Yeah,
yeah. And it was harmless leg touching. Mm-hmm. Just resting my hand on her leg, not really trying to do anything. But her brother ended up telling on her parents.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up getting like almost like ostracized and ridiculed.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say ostracized, but I got in a lot of trouble. Like my parents were like on her side in this for a little bit, until things kind of blew up after I tried to ask for forgiveness and apologize numerous times. And nothing was reciprocated back. No, I forgive you. We understand that you're really trying to work hard on this. I said, I'm sorry multiple times and nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she was so punished that she had a rule where she couldn't sit next to me 2 seats away.
Mm.
So it was like, it was outrageous. Like, her parents, yeah, I honestly don't know how I felt. It was awful because I was being bullied. And now my ex's parents and, well, at the time she wasn't my ex. We were still together, but it was like really, really weird. And like, we didn't like, kind of like a break, but it, you know.
It was even worse than it already was.
Yeah. So I ended up calling things off with her.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, I was like, I wish I didn't call things off.
Right.
I want to try to make this work. I don't know why I thought it was so serious, but you know, I did. 14-year-old me was like, this is the biggest thing in my life.
Of course.
So
you were young, but what was going on was going on.
It was. And it was kind of traumatic, honestly, just like how everything was blowing up with like the bullying and just everything.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And I asked her one Sunday, so do you think the rules, do you think your parents ever like let up, or do you think like even going back to the relationship, do you think you might ever want to like try that again, or would your parents even let it? And she was like, you know what? I'm really not entirely sure.
Mm.
Fast forward a couple hours, because our church did the 2 services, one morning, one evening type right. thing, like most used to do. And I asked her, so what was that this morning? Is it because you don't want to be in a relationship, or you really don't think your parents would ever let it again? And she kind of said, well, she didn't kind of say, she said, it was both. And I was like, so these 2 years that we've actually been going steady together were a waste? She said, no, they were a learning experience. I said back, and this is on me, but I said back to her, these 2 years that were a learning experience, we're learning that we weren't for each other. Because I had thought that I was going to like be with her forever.
Mm.
And she said they were a learning experience. And I said, learning we weren't for each other. And I stormed off and we haven't talked since. And that was like a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say like almost 8 or 9 years now.
Mm.
Which is crazy. Just going back and thinking to all that time. And there was this around this time, one of the youth group guys, he was super into like motorbiking and stuff. And it was like a hobby of his. I remember like it was yesterday. We were sitting in the Bible classroom and he straight up tells me, hey, I went motorbiking the other day and I wished you would come. And I was like, yo, this kid is a friend, because like I'd been bullied so bad by like a bunch of people. And he's like, so I could run you over.
Mm.
And I thought, wait, you wanted to run me over? Like, seriously, dude. Come on. And I ended up like, I wanted to leave. Mm-hmm. I wanted to leave so bad, but my dad had leadership duties and so I couldn't necessarily leave. And so I spent the whole time just like in my head, in my thoughts. And once, you know, worship ended, I ran immediately to the car, took my mom's keys, ran to the car and just sobbed in the car. I was literally so done. I felt like God was against me. I felt like everything was, you know, it was awful, like super gosh awful. It was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember thinking, where is God? Because my parents were going through like super difficult marital problems and I was low-key afraid they were going to divorce and I would have to try to like fight for my brother and sister, because I did not want to be separated from my siblings.
Right.
Because aside from the girl who was now my ex, my brother and my siblings were the biggest thing to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything else around me was falling apart. I was being bullied. My parents were always fighting. And my siblings were just like the biggest thing to me at that time. Right.
How was school?
I was homeschooled.
Okay.
So, you know, trying to balance all of that, you know, all the curriculum my mom was handing to me. And, you know, my brother, my siblings, you know, they're just like doing their stuff. Mom was hanging with them. And, you know, I was just handed my schoolwork and told to, you know, go enjoy the feast. I'll see you when you're finished.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like,
were you the oldest? Is that why?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. My other siblings needed a lot more attention than I did.
Mm.
At the time, there came a point in time where I felt like I needed a different change. So I flipped and went into the public school system for high school.
Mm-hmm.
So that was an interesting decision, but that's a little bit later down in the story. So it was around all this time that my pornography addiction came to like a huge head. I really wasn't like watching super like graphic stuff, but it, you know,
consistency,
the amount of times I was watching it became a lot more like the use and the amount of time. And you know, it was terrible. I really just, you know, I felt bad. I really felt bad. And I was like, you know, several of the peeps in the youth group have gotten baptized.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I wanted to follow in their footsteps. But I had this notion in my head of, until I break free of my addiction, I am never going to be able to, you know, fully surrender to God and never fully be able to, like, do His will and whatever that entails. And so I was like, you know what? Until I break this, I'm not getting baptized. I'm not going to, like, try to do this because I don't think that I'd be a good person. I don't think it would matter because my addiction is too much. My sin is too much. Mm. I had a very legalistic view.
Yeah, you thought you had to clean yourself up,
mm-hmm.
Which is ironic because right. Water washes you.
Good analogy. I like it.
Thank you.
But, you know, I didn't understand that, you know, Jesus saves us.
Mm.
Like, we're enslaved to sin. I didn't understand that at the time. I thought it was very, like, works-based. You know, just like, you got to fix yourself. You got to come to Jesus with, like, a perfect slate so He can give you all these tasks and, you know, go serve Him.
Mm.
Product of a super conservative church, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I really didn't think much of it. I wasn't going to get baptized until I broke the addiction, and that was going to be that. I did not know when I was going to break it because God forbid I tell anybody and then be ostracized and looked down on and just like a awful, terrible human being. Cause I already did it to my parents once. Why was I going to do it again?
Right. Yeah.
And you know,
and you're still probably internalizing.
Oh, 100%,
a lot of that, a lot of shame.
And I wasn't about to, you know, like make my parents feel like they had failed at their job because, you know, unfortunately my parents tie a lot of, you know, their self-worth to, are their children behaving in a worthy manner? And finding out that their son watches pornography, I just couldn't do it to him. So I didn't tell him for a super long time.
Mm-hmm.
It took a super drastic, life-changing situation for me to end up telling them. Like, there was no way I could go around not telling them.
Mm-hmm.
So fast forward several years, my family had switched congregations. There was a whole heap of a lot more that my parents never really delved into, and that's on them. Because, you know, my stuff was a small portion of why we left, but, like, it wasn't the biggest reason, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so we moved to this other church, and it was, like, a 180 style. It was more, you know, liberal. It was more like, hey, we accept you as you are. This is who we are. This is what we are super intentional in, like, making sure marriages work. We're super intentional in, like, families and just character building. And it was the first time I actually experienced a youth minister.
Because
the other church didn't really believe in youth ministers. It was a deacon's job to do all that stuff.
Mm.
So we moved to this church, and I felt like things were going pretty well. Well, I was still in my addiction, and, you know, life was where it was. And
how old are you around this time when you moved to the new church?
14 and 15 years old.
Okay. So a lot happened from 11 to 14.
From, like, right before I became a preteen, like 9 years old, honestly.
Okay. 9 to 14 was just a big period,
mm-hmm.
excuse me,
mm-hmm.
of struggle.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was also around this time that I was, it was decided that I would be held back a year because I wasn't learning at such a fast pace. and I, you know, I had some like learning difficulties and stuff, and just like the pace I was going, it made a lot more sense. Like I didn't repeat anything. I just took a bit longer to, you know, finish school. And so it was decided that I would be counted seventh grade twice.
Okay.
And it was also around this time, lo and behold, that I am on the autism spectrum and have an inattentive ADHD.
So a diagnosis happened around here?
Yes, a diagnosis happened around here. It was right before we moved churches. And I explained to a lot of the youth group that my differences and why I'm such a, for lack of better words, awkward person is because I'm not that good at social skills. I'm not that good at body language. You know, I would jump into conversations a lot. One of the struggles I have is interrupting. I interrupt without meaning to, but if I don't interrupt, my thought's going to go out the window and I'm going to forget about it. And, you know, I have to get my two cents and I have to get my piece and I have to say. But, you know, apparently silence is a good thing too. And that's something I really had to, you know, like struggle with and learn. But, you know, I was told I'm going to be socially awkward and I can't do jack squat about it.
Okay.
And that's why the kids were bullying me, because I'm socially awkward and I can't do a single thing about it. So fast forward to moving to the church, you know, I knew that, you know, I struggled, but like I didn't fully understand why I struggled, you know?
And it's like adding a new piece to your identity.
For sure.
Was it, I'm assuming you didn't perceive it as a very fun revelation.
No. And to be honest, my parents didn't tell me for about 2 years.
Really?
Yeah, I was diagnosed like younger. I think it was like 12-ish or something. Honestly, I can't really remember. It was all this whole story, honestly, is like a blur. I'm surprised I'm even remembering.
So you never went to like see anybody or?
No, I did. I got like an official diagnosis. But my parents didn't tell me for about 2 years. And they really struggled to, you know, look for support, because unfortunately, therapy on that realm is expensive and not many insurance companies, you know, can like cover it, so to say. And so they felt very lost, very like, you know, what are we supposed to do? Our son has this, and like how do we help him? So they did the best that they could with the knowledge that they had, which wasn't much. And, you know, they tried to self-teach me all the social differences and social skills that I would need as growing up. And, you know, for a long time, I held it against them. Why didn't you take me to therapy? Why didn't you, like, help me get through my social differences? And, you know, recently a conversation I had revealed all of that. They just had no support. Like, our pediatrician was like, he's so much not on the spectrum, he's fine.
I'm like,
listen, dude, just because I'm barely on the spectrum doesn't mean that I still don't have struggles.
Right.
Like, I was literally bullied because
that's
struggle.
Why, isn't that why it's a spectrum and not?
Yeah. Like you have
that sentence
there are so many differences. Like, people deal with spectrum, like the autism spectrum is so widely different. Like there's like high functioning to low functioning, you know, you know, it's like a wide range. And just because I'm super high functioning doesn't mean I'm without my struggles.
Right.
I was literally bullied because of it. And so I needed as much help as possible, but I didn't really think much of it because I didn't really understand a lot of it. And my parents really didn't talk about it much. They didn't want it to, you know, like become a label and for me to like really dwell on it.
Okay.
So it was at this time that I really threw myself into my music studies. I played violin since I was 6 years old, and it was just a huge part of my life. If there was anything positive about my identity that I did like, it was that I was killer at the violin.
All right.
I did private lessons. I was a part of the high school orchestra. I was a part of several community groups. I auditioned for region, made it in to that. And my music life was really cool. I was even in the school systems doing, you know, school concert band in percussion.
Really?
And so I really delve into music.
That's awesome.
And, you know, that's really a source of like what gives me comfort through all of this time. It gave me like a sense of foundation. Like, yes, I'm struggling. Yes, I'm autistic and have ADHD, and it presents itself as inattentive type. Inattentive type just means I'm not the hyper hyperactive version. It's just like, okay. Yeah, that's what that means.
It's like issues with focusing, kind of.
Yeah, issues with focusing and zoning out and just like not paying attention. That's my biggest struggles. And a lot of executive functioning issues and just disorganization, but a lot of it is just not really the hyper version of it.
Okay.
So, but what was I saying? Music, yeah. So around 2017, I competed in a competition and ended up winning. And It was the coolest thing ever. I got to perform the piece that I won with in front of a huge audience with an orchestra backing me up. The community youth group I was a part of, they backed me up with, you know, the orchestra backup part to my solo.
And what? Sorry, I'm an orchestra guy too. What piece? I played bass, so I might not know.
Okay,
it, but
it's not commonly known, but it's the A minor concerto by Akeley.
All right, nope,
that's
lost
fair,
me.
That's fair. Look it up, though. It's a cool piece.
I got you.
But I won. And my mom, literally the biggest shouter and cheer in the auditorium. I even got a standing ovation. Mm-hmm. And that was stinking crazy. But I think my mom and my dad put a lot of like my identity into my music. Mm. Because at one point, I decided, you know what, maybe music isn't what I want to do.
Yeah.
I had felt like I had to prove myself through my music. Obviously, my music was my own, and I loved it. But at the same time, if I wasn't doing music, what would I be as a person? What would my parents think of me? Hmm. What would those around me think of me? Just because I'm stinking good at the violin, that's my biggest identity marker. And so I really struggled with that, and it was around this time. Okay, rewind.
Okay, no worries.
Yeah, rewind a tad bit. I ended up getting baptized at a summer camp. Mm-hmm. And this is when I finally started making, you know, God my central identity. Because, you know, I was tired and I didn't really know a whole lot. I was like, you know, I have to be a good Christian. I have to, you know, understand all of what the Bible says. But I was just tired. You know, I'm going to try to do this. I'm going to see what this goes, see how this becomes. And so at a summer camp, one of the keynote speeches one night was super impactful. And that's what pushed me over the edge. And, you know, I'm going to commit. I'm going to do this.
Right.
How this ties in with music was, since becoming a Christian and, you know, trying to make my faith my own, I had many mentors, youth ministers, you know, good, godly men in the church. And, you know, I kind of wanted to be like them. You know, they helped me a lot. They brought me through a lot of my issues, a lot of my struggles. I didn't tell anybody about pornography at this point. I was still like deathly afraid of telling anybody because, you know, I still had the legalistic view of faith.
Right.
Even though I was baptized. But it was during this time where I decided to jump ship and not give up music. Obviously, music is a part of me. I'm always going to do music forever. But I wanted to get into youth ministry. Mm. So I got into youth ministry. I didn't get into youth ministry, but you know that is what I was going to do. Mm-hmm. And it took my mom quite a bit to come around to understanding that I wasn't actually going to be doing music. Like that wasn't going to be what I was doing.
Right.
Because it became such a huge part of who I was. Music. I was going to go to college for it. I was going to, you know, major in violin performance and be one of those guys you would see at like the New York Philharmonic or whatever, Chicago Symphony, just playing like top of the line, super hard solos and stuff. And, you know, I was going to be able to let my family tour around the world, see stuff and, you know, like watch me, you know, give them tickets or whatever, you know, have that opportunity and availability. And to my mom and dad, it felt like I just kind of threw it away because they invested so much time into my music. So many hours, money was just like invested into me becoming the musician that I was. Because I got super serious and I made it to a point where like I could have made it into a college if I wanted to with a scholarship. But you know, it just looked as though I was throwing it away. So I didn't know much about youth ministry. But I knew about this missions program that I could go through. And, you know, it's a super intensive program where you train for about a year, like a school year's worth, start in August and in April. And it's super intensive training, and they put you on a mission team. And then they place you in a mission field somewhere in the USA or overseas. And, you know, I wanted to go do that. You know, that was what was going to launch me into my ministry. Mm-hmm. I was going to learn how to, you know, be a missionary and then go through this, a school of preaching or a university or whatever. That was what my goal and my plan was. Well, this was around sophomore-ish year of high school, I want to say. Mm-hmm. I'd been doing marching band and, you know, just really diving into music. And I wasn't going to give up music. But, you know, I was going to, like, my career was going to be something completely different.
Right.
Than music. And, you know, my family decided to leave the church that we were at. So this is the second time. So we moved once.
Right.
And then we're leaving a church again.
And did you enjoy this church?
I enjoyed it. Unfortunately, they went through, like, 3 youth ministers while we were there.
Yeah, is this typical?
The turnover was awful.
Yeah.
And that's also another one of the reasons why I wanted to become and go into youth ministry is because I went through a whole lot mm-hmm. growing up. I didn't have that youth minister or mentor like I wanted mm-hmm. all that much. And, you know, I wanted to be there for kids just like me.
Okay.
Obviously, I have to be there for the whole youth group, even the popular kids.
Right.
But, you know, I wanted to be there for the quiet kids, the kids that feel like they don't have a voice.
Mm.
And that's one of the reasons why I decided to get into ministry. Well, we moved to another church that has like a thriving youth group. They got a minister. It's great. Me and my siblings, we knew a bunch of kids there because, you know, we'd gone to camp with them mm-hmm. growing up over the years. And like all the churches where I used to live were like super like interconnected and did a lot of like area wide stuff, not just like one church keeping to themselves. We got together a lot. So like mm-hmm. there was a bunch of like interconnecting, intergenerational stuff. It was great.
That's beautiful.
It was awesome. I enjoyed it a lot. But I still felt lost because I was still dealing with my addiction. I was single, still am. And at the time, I was just like, you know what? Is it ever going to happen? But I didn't really think much of it because, you know, like I had just been in a bad situation with a middle school relationship, which doesn't sound all that bad in and of itself because, you know, like middle school relationships are, you know, immature and stupid at sometimes, but you know, mine was pretty serious.
Right.
Just what happened at least.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'd wanted to be in a relationship for a while and just, you know, nothing ever really came up with that. And actually through several friends and, you know, getting super close to this one girl who ironically was the best friend of my ex, which is another story and a half. I ended up getting into a kind of sort of bad depression.
Okay.
I got into a depression. I wasn't suicidal, thank the Lord. It didn't get to where I needed like meds or anything, but like constantly every night just crying myself to sleep.
Mm.
I did end up revealing to my parents that I was going through depression and they sat with me the entire time. But, you know, it was because bad influence at school. I got into a friendship with this one kid who, a foster kid, so his life was in shambles too, you know. Apparently, broke kids attract broke kids.
Broken.
Broken. Not broke. You know, but like...
Yes, I understand.
Emotionally broken.
Right.
Like, we both became really good friends.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, yeah, I was a Christian. Yeah, I was baptized. But it was because of him I actually tried to dabble at New Ageism.
Mm.
And just try to discover what even, like... New Ageism through the lens of Christianity. Like, obviously, through Christianity, I knew that angels, demons, all that stuff existed. But, like, through the lens of New Ageism, like, if God made all these creatures, like, why can't we use them? Why can't we? And, like, the whole, like, chakra system and stuff, I thought that was all, like, a big thing. Mm. But, like, since now learning what I have, it's like, oh. Yeah, that was not a good decision on my part.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I got into a depression because he dumped a lot of his emotional load on me. And then my friend who I was talking to, she was actually kind of suicidal and placed a lot of the like emotional like importance and weight on me to like make sure she was okay.
Mm.
But, you know, we never really actually saw each other in person. It was just over phone that we would communicate. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't like actually know what or how she was really feeling. All I knew that she thought I was trustworthy enough to tell me all of this. and I felt like an emotional wreck. I was so depressed. I was sad. I didn't want to like do much at all. Like getting out of bed, going to school was hard.
Mm-hmm.
God bless my parents. Actually convinced me to take a mental health day one day.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Good
so,
on that.
So we called the school and I ended up taking a mental health day and we went to this place and it was good. I enjoyed it. But, you know, it still didn't help my depression. Also, one of the orchestras that I was a part of rehearsed on Wednesday night. And me going to a church that does Wednesday nights, so I was like, I can't do that. So I ended up quitting that group so I could go back to my Wednesday night church, which was really much needed because afterwards my depression started letting up and I was getting to a better place mentally. Mm. Still dealing with my addiction, though, that didn't go away.
Right.
But I gave up the New Ageism. Me and that one friend from school, we don't talk anymore. And both friends, actually. My relationship with them kind of just like fizzled out and then they're doing their own things now. Mm. I don't even know where that guy is. But yeah. You know, but the girl I was friends with, she's doing okay. I think, I don't know. We don't really talk. Haven't talked in like 3 or 4 years. But let me see. Oh yeah, music. So I decided to get into ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And give up music. I went, so the missions program back to the missions program. That's how I launched into my ministry.
And this is after you graduated high school?
Yeah, after I graduated high school. I thought, you know, ministry, this missions program is going to be what launches me into my ministry career.
So it was like a gap year program, kind of?
Kind of. It's like 2.5 to 3-ish years.
Okay.
It kind of takes the place of college, but mm-hmm. you can go to college if you want to afterwards, but
right.
that was not going to be my plan. You know, who wants a mountain of college debt?
Yeah, true.
So that's what I was going to do. Go to school at this preaching institute, get support from people, and that was going to be how I made my life. But nope, God had other plans. After about 3-ish months of being a part of this missions program, I got dismissed.
Hmm.
It was life devastating.
Yeah.
It was like a whole 180 of what I was even supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
This was very recently, actually, end of 21, that this all happened. I felt, honestly, I didn't really know what to make of the whole situation. Like, what was going on to lead to the dismissal was a lot of misunderstanding from like multiple people.
Hmm.
My social differences, going back to the autism and ADHD, I really struggle with like, you know, the social cues and stuff like that and social skills. And apparently that played into how a lot of the female classmates were feeling about me.
Hmm.
Several of them thought I was kind of awkward and pretty creepy.
Hmm.
And ended up telling admin, hey, this kid's kind of weird.
Say the sentence again without a name.
So it was brought to the administration's attention that, you know, maybe I was making certain people feel uncomfortable. I honestly had no idea, but it was really insanely difficult to, you know, keep these friendships, try to maintain a culture, because I was told by somebody previously who'd been through the program that it's really important to, you know, really try to be comfortable with everybody as possible, because you're going to end up working with several of these peeps on a field for mm-hmm. missionary work. And so I got called in by the administration and we had a conversation, and after being advised to talk with the missions counselor, I had a conversation with him, and ultimately everybody just decided, you know what, it's better and it's safer if you go home. Because I thought the reason I was struggling with all of these differences was because of the way I viewed women through my pornography addiction. Because with that obviously comes a skewed view, right?
Right.
And so hearing that, they're like, oh yeah, we can't keep that here. We're going to have to send you home. I had accountability partners. I was doing decently well. And, you know, I'd actually revealed to like trusted people in this class. It was like one or two peeps. And I'd revealed to my youth minister before going because I was like, I have to fix this. I'm so done. I'm tired.
Right.
And he was a source of like a lot of good help, but I still didn't tell my parents until getting dismissed, because obviously the reason I thought that everything was happening was because of the pornography addiction. And, you know, maybe it was, but also there was like a lot of the social differences too, and just longing to, you know, like try to make connections, because, you know, connections with people really hasn't been my strong suit. And I really wanted friends, and being bullied, you know, it's just like really came to a head. But, you know, I told my parents about my pornography addiction, and then I moved home.
Mm-hmm.
I moved home and was there for about 2-ish years, really not knowing what I was supposed to be doing with my life.
Mm.
I went to counseling. I went to different, you know, recovery groups to try to, you know, work on my issues, because that was part of the agreement with my parents. Obviously, they let me come home. They said, if you need a home, we'll be here. We love you. It was a much better situation than what I told them originally all those years ago.
Right.
But, you know, I still felt really bad because I had told my parents, what do they think of me now? How do they feel about, you know, their son went behind their back all these years doing this thing? And so I really struggled with, you know, my relationship with my parents after coming home, because it was like, at one point they were like, are you serious about fixing this? Because, you know, I came home and I still struggled.
Right.
Are you serious about fixing this? You say you want to go back to this missions program, but are you really serious about it?
Mm.
It got to a point where I was just done with deciding to go back to the missions program. Because they told me, hey, you can come back. But, you know, after how the reaction was, you know, I'd been doing okay. I'd worked on the relationships with people. They still told me to come home. And I really couldn't, like, put myself back in that situation and try to, you know, do this over again. Mm-hmm. I wasn't about to, you know, be in that situation again. So these 2 years was a lot of soul searching. It was during this time that, you know, I decided to really make my faith my own. And it was through this missions program that I learned that it wasn't legalism, that it wasn't, you know, you have to earn your faith. It was, hey, Jesus died to loose the bonds of slavery of sin on you. Mm. You are free because of Jesus's death.
Mm.
He destroyed sin. He destroyed the power of sin through his death. And I thought that was the coolest thing ever. Like, God loves me despite anything I ever could have done.
Right.
So I'd actually gained a best friend through all of this, being back home and just really like trying to dive into my faith. And I got super involved with my church ministry, helping out with worship, helping out with youth groups and stuff. And it was great. I enjoyed being at home. But, you know, at some point I wanted to, you know, grow up, move out of the house, because, you know, I graduated college. Not college, I graduated high school. And, you know, I wanted to spread my wings and still do ministry. But I came home and I realized, working with worship ministry at my church, that I still really loved music. I still really wanted to do this music thing. But what if I paired it with ministry and did worship ministry instead?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I wanted to do instead. And I heard about this university that had a good worship ministry program. But, you know, my music skills, you know, I had the music skills, right?
Right.
I wanted more ministry. Mm-hmm. I wanted to learn how do I effectively lead a good ministry for God? How do I get the congregation excited about worship?
Mm-hmm.
So I went into a ministry degree, and that's where I am now. My life has not totally been the way I wanted it. And, you know, for most of my childhood growing up, especially in preteen and adolescent years, basically, my life has been felt pretty sucky. I've hated most aspects of it, but I'm grateful for everything I've been through. I wouldn't change a single aspect of it.
Mm.
Whenever I give my testimony, which is not very often, I've decided to, you know, kind of end it all with, you know what? My life hasn't been that great, but I still have a whole lot more to live. So to be continued. My life, my story, it's to be continued. And that's where I'm going to leave this, because ultimately, my life is in God's hands. Whatever happens is whatever is going to happen. Sure, I struggle a lot with a lot of things. I've told numerous people trying to, you know, work, not a lot of numerous people, but I've told, you know, trusted people with my addiction, just trying to, you know, be accountable to them, use apps on my phone, this and that, and you know, and I'm committed. And so my story is to be continued because I still have a lot left to write. Well, God still has a lot left to write and to show me through my life.
Awesome. So, well,
to be continued.
Thanks so much. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it.
All right. You are dismissed. Thank you again. Awesome. Well, just thinking back on this episode, a lot of questions of identity were brought up. A lot of the theme was identity and internalizing things you've done and making that your identity. And I think one of my biggest conclusions from this episode, and this is something that has been on my heart before we recorded, is our salvation is our identity. Becoming one with Christ is our identity. So I'll leave you all with that. Thanks so much for listening. We've got a couple more episodes left in this season, and we're super excited. Thanks again.